No taxation without representation. 200 years of exploitation in the capital of this nation. No representation in the capital of this nation. 200 years of exploitation. Give the people their right to vote.
Someone asked me, was it true? The voting rights of the district were long overdue.
That was Sweet Honey in the Rock with Give the People Their Right to Vote. Hello and welcome to Shadow Politics, an hour-long grassroots talk show which will attempt to shine a light on the issues that you care about. I'm your host, United States Senator Michael D. Brown, coming to you live from the District of Columbia, America's last colony. I am joined by my co-host, Kathleen Gomez, and together we hope our show will start a dialogue with America about the issues that are important to you and affect the lives of all of us. So join in the discussion by calling in at 888-627-6008 or Skype us at BBS Radio 1. That's 888-627-6008 or Skype us at BBS Radio 1. We have no guests today, and hopefully we'll get to you to join in the conversation. So Kathleen and I are just going to wing it, which we've been doing the last couple of weeks because we've just been working crazy and haven't had a chance to line up a guest. We've called some very interesting people, and we hope in the next week or two we'll have them on. But, you know, I think we're opinionated enough, and there's enough going on that we can have a show and just talk about what's on our minds. You know, basically, Kathleen will tell you what's on her mind, and I'll listen. And we hope you call in and join in and let us know what's on your mind.
I wish you would listen.
Are you there?
Yeah, I'm here. Good. Thank you very much once again having me on the show. Like, you could do it without me, right?
Yeah, no, I couldn't. I tried it one night. It didn't work well. I got lucky. Some guy called in. Some really angry guy. So we got to fight with each other for 20 minutes. So it worked okay. But other than that,
you get to fight with somebody other than me. That's nice.
Yeah, with somebody. With a guy. So I had an even chance. With you, I've got no chance.
Because I tag team your wife. You know, we always go, okay, you go in for the kill. You know, we take turns. But no. You know, it's I can't believe it. Daylight Savings Times is happening, what, next weekend or this weekend?
Oh, it is?
Next weekend? Yeah, it's this weekend or next weekend, right?
I hate that. It'll make me so depressed.
Well, yeah, because actually you gain an hour. You don't lose an hour. You know, you fall back and you spring forward. So
yeah, but it gets dark.
Yes, it's going to be dark.
The dark depresses me. Of course, you people in Arizona don't do that because you don't believe. You don't believe in things like the sun and gun safety, and you know.
We just believe in common sense. In other words, why would you want to do it? I mean, I remember the first time they did it. I think I was maybe about 10 or something, or they were doing it up until that time. And you know, my bedtime was 9 o'clock. Can you imagine that on a Friday? Nowadays, the kids would have, you know, bedtime limits, and I had to go to bed at 9, and it was bright outside, and I couldn't go, and I cried and I cried because I just couldn't figure out how I was going to go to sleep with it so light out. So in Arizona, we really have so much sunshine that it's kind of nice when it's not there. You know, you get to enjoy having a little bit of a downtime. So yeah, we are the only one that does it, and it's hard because I remember I was late to our friend Christina Romero's wedding. She was in New Mexico, and I assume for some reason we're in the Southwest, we would be in the same time zone, and later almost missed the big dress rehearsal by an hour because the time was so, they were an hour ahead and we were not. So it is a little bit screwy, but I think it definitely saves a lot of money. I mean, you always hear about this daylight savings time meant for the farmers and their children not to be working out in the dark. And it's really quite a costly thing that we do. I mean, I'm not sure that we get the benefits that we did at, you know, 20, 30 years ago.
Well, you know, they started it during the Second World War, right? To save money, to save energy. And you know, when we used to ration everything before my time, of course. But who knows? Who knows what we're going back to? We were just talking about that today, right? The survivalists out there who are going to Costco and buying a year's worth of food and are worried about things like Ebola. Although that is pretty scary. What's happened the last week or so has been pretty scary.
It's not like, you know, you can't make the correlation to, and people may laugh at this, bed bugs, but it is like that. It is like you have one bed bug and in a week or so you'll have your rooms full of bed bugs. It's something that it multiplies, you know. I mean, it is. It's interesting. We were reading an article in the Washington Post that said right now, 10 to 15,000 people need to be isolated in the West African countries where this is all taking place. And for every one of those, they infect two. And then they said by next month it would be 45,000. And the month after that, it would be 100,000 if they don't somehow manage to shut it down as we speak. So, you know, and let me tell you, another thing that people have to think about, it's kind of very scary, is, you know, in the United States, tuberculosis was at one point almost non-existent and almost gone away. And I remember when I moved back to the border, they were starting to talk about how a lot of the people that they would catch, and it wouldn't just be Latin America, it'd be anyone who were coming in, even from Europe, were showing signs of tuberculosis. And they were talking about it when they built the new border station in Douglas, was just one of the largest on the Mexican border. They actually have their own, air system in which they somehow, all the air in there where they bring in the people that they catch coming in illegally, the air has to be, you know, go through these cycles and stuff before it's released into the environment or the atmosphere because of it. And interesting, you know, my son Diego was working at a hospital, St. Mary's, which is considered the poor person's hospital in Tucson, and he has the signs of it. He tested positive for tuberculosis. And a year and a half ago when he went in, and you know, you have to get the test before you get hired by the hospital, he didn't have it. No signs of even it being close, you know. But this time they do the checkup every year, and he tested positive. And now he is going to go for a week and take shots for it so that it doesn't become active and they can kill it. Otherwise, if he let it go, he has a 50% rate of getting it becoming active. And then it's a pretty high rate of being sick with it and kept incapacitated. So, you know, it's something that you don't want to go crazy and start, you know, putting a tent around your house or walking around in suits. But I think that in a sense, when it comes to funding and it comes to helping try to contain this disease, I think it's in our best interest to do so.
Well, now that Kathleen has scared everybody out there, let's move on. We do have to worry about these things. And I hope the Ebola thing...
programs.
Huh? Yes.
We have to fund these things because, you know... And we should be putting all the medicine and all the facilities that we can into where those people are, you know, the 15,000 people, and not just bringing a couple of Americans back and treating them here. You know, I mean, it really should be an all-out effort.
And you know what? We haven't had an epidemic in a long time, you know, but certainly in our parents' generation, there were several of them. I lost an aunt in the great influenza epidemic of the early 1900s, a person I never knew. She died in childhood. My sister, my mother's older sister, and my mother had polio, which affected her. She walked with a limp. You know, there were many, many epidemics.
Smallpox.
Smallpox. You know, when they came out with the oral vaccine and polio, I think we're the first ones to get it. I mean, my mother lined us up. We waited in line for hours to be the first ones in the door. So let's hope we don't go through any of that again. But you're right. An ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure. And now that for those few of you who haven't turned off your internets because you're scared, let's talk a little about statehood, which is certainly one of our prime topics on the show. It's one of the reasons for the show. And we've had a few recent developments, not a whole lot, but we're still gaining momentum. We got the Washington Post last week wrote an editorial suggesting that Eric Holder, our recently retired attorney general, be appointed to a blue ribbon commission, presidential commission, to study ways to get statehood. And that's been a somewhat controversial issue. Some activists say that we don't need that and it's silly and we should just pursue a course of having the president stand up for statehood. But I think it's not a bad idea. I think we need to bring some attention to the statehood movement. And I think somebody like Eric Holder would do that. I think a presidential commission would do that. And we need to get the support of the country. We know that we're not going to get statehood through this conservative Republican House, but we continue to get co-sponsors in the hopes that we'll build up some momentum for the bill and that when the environment's better, we'll be able to get it passed. And I think Holder would build up momentum for the bill.
Okay. All right. I've got to weigh in with my rural Arizona outside the beltway comment. Are you ready?
God, yes. But if you haven't been scared already, just sit there. You'll be scared in a moment. Go ahead.
Nobody likes Eric Holder out there, you know, in the rural areas, especially from Arizona. You know, he was part of that whole Fast and Furious thing where they allowed the cartels to buy guns and then they were going to trace them and the whole thing got all messed up. And they had a Border Patrolman killed, tied to the guns that were sold by the United States to the Mexican cartels. So, you know, that was a huge freaking deal in anywhere that state is aligned with the Mexican border, because it's just kind of, you know, it's a very hot issue. And I don't know anyone who thinks very well of Eric Holder for his handling of that. So I'm just saying, from a rural point, I think people would say, you know, I don't know if your commission would help you in that kind of sense. And let me ask you another question. What does a commission do? Does it take a year or two to study the issue and then you get funding from the government to do it? Or is it a voluntary advisory?
No, I think they report and they tell you what they think. And maybe they think of creative ideas resolving a problem. I think they try to. I think the idea behind it would be to bring great minds together to find solutions for our problem. And let me just be perfectly frank with you. We're just not sitting around holding our breath, waiting on the support from the people of Arizona. Okay.
I bet you would find the report. I bet you would find that you have support in Arizona, but I think it's got to be even more influential. No, you have to let me speak. I know you're a politician. I know it's very hard for you, but let me finish what I'm going to say, is that I think you would have a lot of support from people if they don't see all this government layers involved in it. I mean, that's the biggest thing people have a problem with D.C. is all the layers and everyone's got to get involved. And then it seems very muddy and it doesn't seem like it's really, you know, I just think you're better off going to people to get them to support you than to have commissions of people that, you know, are not, well, whatever. But I think out there in rural or Arizona or anyone out there outside of the Beltway who would like to kind of give their opinion on the conversation as it's going, please do so. Please call, because I know he tends to think that I'm just, you know, sometimes a redneck kind of gone off the wall. But I think the problem is, again, with politics is that you guys inside the Beltway, even though I am now inside the Beltway, I can see it. You just, you know, it's a different perception outside of the Beltway and what they hear and what they experience. And I think that that's always got to be something you guys are aware of. You don't always know exactly what's right for everyone else, and you have your opinion. And if people have a difference of opinion, it just means they're looking at it differently. And I think politicians need to hear that and be open to it more often. So there we go.
Well, yeah, if you're out there, what's your, you're the Gila Monster State? What is your,
The Saguaro, the Saguaros, you know, and the Grand Canyon State, excuse me.
Yeah, because you're monster. a little prickly out
what,
there.
What is your DC motto? What do you get? You're the 51 stars. If you become a state, you're going to be called
our motto
New Columbia. Very weird name.
You know, our motto in Washington is we know better than you, so just be quiet and listen. That's
just
our,
do what we tell you. Now
just
that I
do
believe.
What we tell you, and you won't get in trouble. Yeah.
And we won't come knocking down your door. So
exactly.
Just do what we say, and you won't be on the list when we come to get your guns.
Exactly. We don't have a slogan. We're not equal yet. They don't let us have a slogan. I don't think we have a bird or a flower either.
No flower?
I don't think so. I don't know what it would be. It would, you know.
It wasn't DC built on a swamp?
Well, part of it is built on a swamp, yeah. So I guess it would be the cattail or the swamp weed or something. I don't know what it is. I'm sure we have one. I just can't think of what it is. And I think I know Virginia's flower is the dogwood.
And Maryland?
Black-eyed Susan. And
you know what? I've got it. It should be the cherry blossom.
Because yeah, it should be the cherry blossom.
Here. They're not next to native, but yeah, for the cherry blossom festival, that's so huge here and it's so beautiful. If you ever
it really is beautiful.
And during that time when it's like 3 days or 4 days they're in bloom and you're lucky, oh, it is just, it's really beautiful around the time.
Now they built the Martin Luther King Memorial right in the middle of the cherry blossom. So it's even prettier. And all around the Jefferson Memorial and, yeah, it is pretty nice. It's you know, we have, Washington is pretty moderate. We don't have, in weather, we don't have extreme cold or extreme heat or, you know, we have a few humid weeks, but that's about it. And a few really cold weeks, but that's about it. But, man, there's just a period called Indian summer, which ought to be coming up here any week now. And the early spring where the weather's just magnificent. And it's a great time. And cherry blossom season, which is in April, is usually just great weather, great time to come to Washington. Come visit. Kathleen will show you around.
Oh, well, you are the senator, the representative of this great soon-to-be state. So
call us and say, I listen to Shadow Politics.
Yes.
And you can say the magic words.
Which
Senator Brown is smarter than Kathleen. I will take you around and show you around Washington. Or Senator Brown is right. Senator Brown is right.
Go. Senator Brown is right because, you know, it would be hard for you to get anyone to basically say that I was wrong.
But so that's one thing that's going on in statehood. Other than that, they're going to give us a couple of nickels and dimes for statehood. But now the mayor and the head of the city council want to control the money. And it's just stupid. We need to be fully funded. And so if you're out there and you listen to our show and you care about the things we talk about, call the Wilson Building. I have to get the number for you. Call the Wilson Building and tell Chairman Mendelson to fund the delegation and stop this nonsense. Probably the greatest thing that happened to me all week, Kathleen, you know what it is. You were there.
Oh, I was there. I stood in line for you so you could be the first. I want you to know that's how loyal I am to you.
She didn't have the money, so she even fronted me the money.
I would have given you the whole $20 because it was $1 a throw.
I would have spent $100 if I had to. on the second throw, I dumped our chairman of the city council, who's been standing in our way, Phil Mendelson, in the dunk tank for charity. And it was 50 degrees outside. I got to watch him freeze his skinny little butt off. And then, because there is a God and because he's on the right side, when Phil went to get back on the platform, the thing collapsed and he fell in a second time. I got twice my money's.
We all remember this is for statehood, and you had quite a crowd that was, you know, happy to see it happen. And I think, you know, and again, from being outside the Beltway, I want to understand what the chairman has done. He's introduced legislation that basically gives you nickels and dimes to be split three ways, takes a good chunk of money to have someone hired as an executive director, as I understand, and the mayor would decide. I'm not sure if it would be you guys who decide or you all decide, which you know how well that would work. And this guy would be reporting to all five of you. And and they still don't fund you. So now what he's done is changed the map or changed what I think is the fundamental structure of what a senator is and does. And that's they don't give anyone have to submit a budget to – and maybe people would say they should, but to a mayor or to their governor of their state, which is what he's basically is. They're like the mayor. I mean, the mayor is your top person, then Phil Mendelson would be your second, and then they're going to have control. They want you to tell them what you're going to do. And, you know, to me, it's like all of a sudden these guys are seeing the train leave the station, and they want to be not only on the train, but they want to be the conductor now that you've worked so hard to get it to this point.
Well, I think they want to remain in control. Yeah, that they, you know, they don't necessarily want to run things that are the day-to-day operation, but they want to be in control. They want to make sure that you're not going to be able to do anything that they don't want you to do. So if you do something that they don't like, they can intervene. Now, theoretically, we would have three of the five votes, and it's a majority vote situation. So we'd pretty much be able to do what we want.
That's if you guys all get along.
Right. But it still gives them some control. And in addition to that, the craziest thing is that you have a fund of $224,000, and $100,000 of it is going to go to pay somebody to manage the fund. So more than half the money is just going to go to a manager who may be appointed by us, but we'll have to answer it all. It's just, the whole thing is crazy. And
that's not what a Senate is. And when people elect you as a senator, they're not electing you to be underneath the authority of the mayor and the chairman of the council.
Yeah, but unfortunately what happened when they elected us is they've elected us without any funding and without any support. And that's the thing. We're just, you know, we're like orphans out there. So I've been an orphan most of my life, and the vast majority of my life, actually. And this is what happens to orphans. They take what they can get, and they don't get much. And that's really what's going on here. And it's sad because we are making real progress, and we could advance the cause significantly if they would just step back a little bit. So, look, if you're out there and you like us and you're listening and you want to help the statehood movement, in your spare time, call 202-724-8032. That's 202-724-8032. That's the chairman of the city council. His name's Phil Mendelson. And say, fund the delegation, Phil. It's time to fund the delegation.
I think you need to be clear that there is another piece of legislation out there that you were real comfortable with, and that it was like $1.2 million to be split between the three of you, which you felt, and that was payment for you also and another senator and the rep, right?
Right. That's exactly right. You can give us money to hire staff, and it would be a positive thing. It's not a lot of money on a $9 billion budget, and it would fully fund the delegation. And that's what we mean by funding the delegation, pushing that other piece of legislation. He knows that's the case. Right now, we're screwing around with this other piece of legislation, and it's just a distraction. It's just a way, I think, more than anything, to block the legislation that we need. And that's the worst part of it, you know.
Yes.
It's like sometimes people talk about budget autonomy and getting one vote and, you know, how this would be helpful. But the thing that's not helpful about it is that once that happens, then that stands in the way of what we really need, which is statehood. And statehood would make us equal. Statehood would make us whole. And, yeah, I think these guys are afraid of it. They don't want somebody on the city council that's going to push for it. And they don't want their authority usurped on the city council. And it's just right. It's ridiculous. It's time that we move ahead. And before I threw that fateful ball that hit the big red button and knocked his butt into the water, I said to him, this is for all the people that believe in statehood, Phil. And I let her fly. And
if anyone wants to go and see those pictures, they can actually go on your Facebook page, which is Michael D. Brown, and they can see three good shots of it happening. And he didn't look too happy when he saw that you had that ball. He's not got the happiest look on his face, I must admit.
That's exactly right. He had the same look on his face that the Roadrunner had when he encountered the coyote.
And let me also add that Puerto Rico is...
We have LaWanna on line one. Let's see what LaWanna wants. Maybe LaWanna was there and saw us knock him in the water or something.
Okay.
LaWanna, are you there?
Hi. Hi, I'm here.
Yeah, what's up,
man? I just wanted to let you know that we do have a bird. It's the wood thrush. A tree, it's a scarlet oak. And a flower is the American Beauty Rose.
Oh,
Beauty Rose. Hey, that's that sounds like us, the American Beauty Rose. That's good, LaWanna. Thanks for calling in and letting us know that. And we have the wood thrush.
Wood thrush is our bird.
Shouldn't we be like the bald eagle? We're the capital of America. No offense. I'm sure the wood thrush is a lovely bird. Please don't call in bird lovers to tell me what a loser I am because I don't like the wood thrush. I can't think of what a wood thrush looks like, but I'm sure it's a lovely, lovely bird. But I'm thinking the bald eagle. You know, Benjamin Franklin wanted to make the turkey the national bird. He really did because he said everybody used the eagle. You know, the Romans used the eagle and the Germans used the eagle and turkeys are native to America. So he wanted to use the turkey. But imagine all those poor flag bearers that would have had to walk around with a thing with a turkey on top.
Makes me think you guys should be the peacock because all you politicians here, you know, like to show off. So,
because we
strut around.
Yeah, strut around. What's the Arizona
bird? My question to you today is that the 12 Republicans in the district are worried that if we become a state, that we will keep the same corrupt politicians that we have in office right now. How can we have that not happen?
Well, first of all, I'm sad to hear that one of our Republicans have died because there used to be 13 Republicans in the district. So it's sad to know that one of them has passed on. But beyond that, I think it would attract more people to run, better people to run for public office if we had real offices like senators and representatives that could vote. You know, no offense, I think I'm eminently qualified to be the United States Senator. But if I had a vote, I think I'd have more competition than I have, or even if they pass the legislation that we've been talking about, more people would step up to the plate. You know, I think of this guy that was a great politician. He was a United States Senator from Massachusetts. His name was Ed Brooke, and he was a Washingtonian. And Ed, who served for many years in the United States Senate from Massachusetts, served with President Kennedy when he was a senator and served. He was the first elected black United States senator after Reconstruction. Just an amazing guy. But he moved to Massachusetts because he was a Washingtonian, and he came back after the Second World War after serving in a segregated unit and wanted to get into politics, and there was nothing here in Washington to run for. So he went to Massachusetts, ran and became a legend, you know, and I think we get more people like Ed Brooke running in Washington if we were a state and we had equal rights. I think it keeps a lot of people away. You know, a lot of people vote in their home state. They don't change their registration even when they come to Washington,
right,
which is just crazy. It's illegal, first of all, but a lot of them do it because they don't want to lose their franchise. Yeah. So, you know, I think that, first of all, Luana, I think you should run because you know the wood thrush and the American Beauty Rose are a flower and a bird. Nobody else seemed to know that, so maybe you ought to step up to the plate and run. But I think we get, more people involved, and I think we'd have better candidates if we were a state. You know,
I tend to agree with that.
Yeah, go ahead, Luana.
Well,
I was going to say too that what concerns me is that the thing that you were talking about earlier. When the stupid city council here has decided to hire some sort of a person that would report to the city council, and I mean, I don't know exactly how it works. I mean, you know it better, but I mean, that fellow that you get to pay $100,000 to, and he's going to report to this corrupt city council.
Yeah, well, he's going to report to us too, but yeah, I mean, it's silly. It entitles them to have control. And
have you ever known anywhere? Excuse me. Have you ever known anywhere where one person can report to five people, and that it actually works? I mean, five people who are supposedly all in the same level of status. I don't see how that's going to work.
That's a good point.
It's a lot like the blind man and the elephant.
Yeah, exactly. And the old fable of the blind man describing the elephant. That's probably pretty accurate description of what it'll be. It'll be mayhem. But they really don't care about that so much. They just care about keeping control and keeping us contained. And it's ridiculous because we're reaching a point now where we really are at a critical point where we've got all sorts of people standing up for this, from the President of the United States to the leader of the Senate. You know, for the first time in 21 years, we had a Senate hearing on this. I got to testify, and they didn't want me to testify, as you well know, but we got to testify, and this stuff is moving, and we have to keep it moving. So thanks for calling in, Luana. I hope you listen to the show regularly.
I'll talk to you soon.
Okay, thanks. But yeah, that's absolutely true. How are you going to have one guy reporting to five people? And, you know, it's just going to be a mess, but I don't think they care about whether it's a mess or not. I think they just want to make sure that, you know, we don't step out and do anything, bold and get statehood. So why don't we take a little break and, we'll get our bearings here. And tonight we're going to play a song. You know, I'm very grateful in life. I'm happy because I've been working hard and I've had a lot of people working with me. So I'm going to play a song that always makes me feel happy. And this goes out to the many people that have been helping me: Pat, Kathleen, Rachel, Mary, Bonnie, Trisha, Maura, Pam, Harry, Dave, Paul, Audrey, Sue, Shelley, Karen, Walt, Sarah, Peter, Ron, Camille, Sydney, Sam, Charles, Karen, Lucia, and Nick. We'll be back in a few minutes. Well, that was Doug, the engineer from the show, with his great idea of selling us to the highest bidder. And, I just want to say I'm not totally against that idea. So Hawaii or California or one of the other cool states that's out there, if you want to make a bid on Washington, D.C., we'll consider any reasonable offer. I'd love to go with Hawaii, for example. You know,
that I wonder if North Dakota would.
Yeah, North Dakota. You, no, North Dakota. I'm sorry. If you're in North Dakota, the bidding is closed because it's a little too cold for me up in North Dakota. But yeah, we somebody said that at a meeting one night. They said, "Well, why retrocede to Maryland? Why not retrocede to Alaska? And we make a little money out of the deal because people in Alaska get the oil allowance." And we ought to get an allowance for being aggravated and for being a target and for being, you know, putting up with all the other things we have to in the nation's capital. So what else do you want to talk about? We've talked about all the fun issues tonight, Ebola and statehood and, you know, everything else we can think of. What else? You know, they're messing with our gun control laws again here in the District of Columbia. Soon, you're going to be able to carry a concealed weapon in the District of Columbia.
Isn't that crazy with all the kinds of attacks that there have been on politicians? Like, remember, against Ronald Reagan and where Jim Brady was really, you know, quite, you know, was hurt pretty seriously, and it impacted his ability to continue to work. Yeah. I mean, and if politicians don't, it's like the way the postal workers are. I mean, you know, I can't imagine how angry people are, you know, against certain politicians or whatever, that they wouldn't just come here knowing they can get a gun, get a permit, and then, you know, what's to keep you from just going up and shooting somebody? I don't understand the thinking of this when there's so much security in this town. You can't even have waste baskets, you know, up near the Capitol. You can't throw away trash because there's no waste baskets.
Right.
How they could possibly allow this to happen and see it as a right. I mean, it's like saying, okay, yeah, you live next to the school of all little kids, and yes, you have mental problems, but go ahead and buy an AK-47 or whatever they're called.
Well, you know what? I don't understand. I never have understood why gun advocates skip the first three words of the Second Amendment. They understand the end of the Second Amendment, that no law shall be created that abridges the right of people to bear arms. They understand that, but they don't understand the beginning of the Second Amendment, the first four words being a well-regulated militia. A well-regulated, militia being essential to the security of the state. Well-regulated. So I don't know why they have so many problems with regulation. I mean, geez, you can't own a car in this country without insurance, without proving proficiency, without a license, because of its potential danger. And if you don't think a gun is potentially dangerous, you're just crazy.
Yeah, you are. I mean, like we've said before, and we've had big discussions, I believe that depending on where you are and your circumstances really should be how people deal with gun control. It should be, you know, relevant to the area in which you live, because heaven knows a ranch on the Mexican border is a lot different than an apartment in New York City. So, yeah. You know, we have to have common sense approach to this. And I think just letting people come into the city and letting them now, do you? So, if I can carry a gun in Arizona, you know, we have these laws that, you know, I don't even think now I have to conceal it. I think I can just wear a holster and walk into a school, walk into on the college campus or into a bar or into a restaurant, whatever, and have it there, you know, have it on my, like you did in the old Western times. But if I had that, could I then use that permit to come into DC, or would I have to apply for one in DC?
Well, here's the strange thing. The law that's being considered now, and it's just been struck down by a judge, so we have to reconsider it, but it would require you in the District of Columbia to show cause to have a gun, to not only be able to have a gun, you couldn't carry it, it has to be concealed, couldn't carry it on the outside, and you'd have to show a reasonable reason for having it, to have a carry permit. But if you had a license to carry a gun in another state, you could bring it in. So where I'd have to show reason to carry a gun, if you had a concealed permit from Arizona, you'd be allowed to carry a gun.
Oh my gosh! And so I'm walking around what say 14th and U. That is definitely property that is owned by the District of Columbia, or that is part of the city. But if I went on to say the Corcoran Gallery or to the art gallery on the mall, that would be federal government, correct?
And then what happens? That's interesting. I'm not sure what happens to you there, but I think the same law applies because you can already carry a gun on federal property. The problem in the district is there's no way to get onto federal property without crossing through the district. So, for example, members of Congress can carry guns in the halls of Congress.
Really?
But they can't transport the gun to Congress. So they would have to, you know, if they really wanted to carry a gun in the halls of Congress, they would have to have a Capitol policeman or somebody who's authorized to carry a gun come pick up the gun from the house in Virginia, because they all live in Virginia and Maryland, and bring it into the Capitol and then give it to them.
Oh,
it's kind of strange. So it was a guy, a staffer, that was arrested earlier, I think it was last year, for bringing a gun in for the senator from Virginia.
Wow. It just kind of goes beyond common sense. And now they're just getting involved just on the sake of principle. And sometimes principle works, sometimes it doesn't. Given when that principle was written and when you just kind of try to practice it in everyday, you know, practices, this just does not make any sense.
No, it doesn't make any sense. And you know what? That's the problem. We need to use common sense when it comes to this stuff. We need to, you know, I don't know why that's gone out the window and everybody's embraced their agenda. It's one of the reasons that Congress is so deadlocked these days, is because we've all embraced some sort of ideology, and we're clinging to it tightly, and any variation from that ideology is a capitulation. So we stopped using our common sense, and we stopped thinking about issues in terms of the specific impact, and we think of them in some sort of pure state, which is just makes it totally debilitating. We can't get anything done in this city because we can't ever come together. You know, we can't come to some reasonable policy on immigration because people are so anti-immigration, some people, that they won't budge an inch, and some people are so pro immigration that they won't budge an inch. We have to come up with some reasonable compromise. You know, you and I have talked about this on border security. You know, we don't want to put a fence around Arizona and Texas and Southern California, but we also don't want a situation where anybody can come in from ISIS to, God knows who, can just stroll across the border with no border security. We want reasonable border security with reasonable restrictions, but also reasonable restraint, and we can't come to that because we have two sides that won't agree on anything.
That's true. You know. That's so true.
And yes, we talk border security is something we've talked about a lot, you know, because it's an important issue, especially down where you come from. You know, and I think everybody's agreed. We don't want to seal off the United States from everybody, but we want to keep the United States safe. And in this environment that we find ourselves in these days, that's a difficult thing to do, and we got to reach some sort of compromise in order to make it happen. Same thing about guns. You know, nobody wants to take guns away from law-abiding citizens and make sure that nobody has access to a gun, but we want to make sure that our kids are safe, for God's sakes, and that people don't walk into a crowded theater and start shooting people like they did in Aurora, Colorado, or that people don't go into a school like Columbine or Virginia Tech and start murdering students, or you know.
It goes on and on. It's happened so many times in so many different places.
Look at all those poor children in Connecticut. You know, who wants that? We don't want to prevent that. People that have guns don't want to see that happen. They don't want to see that happen. They don't want to see children hurt.
And I think what's happened, again, and I find it when we talk about gun control, it's so much about the Second Amendment and your right to own a gun. But what it really all comes down to is that there is none, I mean, I don't think it exists if there is very little on mental health. Because as we've seen all these episodes occurring, whether it be at the elementary school, at the college level, or in a postal office, been most of the time done by people who are struggling with mental health issues. Their community has known about it, but nobody knows what to do because there aren't that many programs. And I mean, I know a lot of people think very highly of Ronald Reagan, but I remember, and I've said this on the show so many times, the day that they kind of closed the mental hospitals and just kind of let everyone go in the streets. It was like overnight, New York City's homelessness increased by 50 to 75%, and it became again a very dangerous place because these people need help. They're not well. They can be angry and violent and have severe mental issues, and you have to be able to treat them. You have to be able to deal with them, and especially with all our soldiers coming back, you know, with all the post-trauma stress and all the pressure that there is these days financially on families. And when you lose your job, you kind of think that there's no hope, and your anger turns to the guy who fired you, you know, because there aren't jobs out there in our economy, and our economy is not recouping like, you know, people in Washington say. I mean, it is a very scary thing, and you put all those things together, and you've got a very serious situation that's going to be difficult to deal with if we don't realize that mental health issues has got to be something we fund and something we take seriously, and we have to be like in a village again. People, if you know somebody is not well, you know this neighbor, and the son is just whacked out, yet he's got guns, you need to report it, and the police need to be take that information, take it seriously, you know, make sure they don't, you know, violate anyone's civil rights, but at the same time, be cognizant of the fact that there are guns in a house with people who are mentally unstable.
Well, you know, and that's the problem. And we have that problem with every issue. You know, again, if you want to talk about immigration, you know, I don't think people want to send people who have been here for years, working hard, and are good, loyal Americans back because they don't have the right documentation. I mean, there are a handful of people that want to do that, but I think the average American doesn't want to do that. They just want to make sure that we have a reasonable immigration policy. We're a country of immigrants, for God's sakes. All of us are immigrants at one point in our recent history. You know, it's not like any of us, if you're not a Native American, your family hasn't been here for more than 200 years. It's impossible. So, you know, I think we all want reasonable policies, but we both get so, both sides get so entrenched in their particular positions that we can't reach a compromise, and it's just terrible. I wish there was somebody out there listening now who would call in and tell us how they feel about it, because I'd really be interested in knowing how people feel in terms of what we can do to come to compromise. It seems to me that there used to be a thing called being an American, where there were a set of core values that we all shared and that we cared about, and that brought us together on certain issues. I'm not sure that we have that same set of core values anymore. You know, we may have some, but they're fewer and far between. And I think we need to get back to a rational way of thinking, and we all need to start with some basics. You know, we all need to accept certain propositions, like we love this country, we love what it stands for, we love the freedom, we love our children, we love, you know, what made this country great, and then we need to build on those things. I really believe that.
No, I do. And I think you know, like I always say, I'm always on my soapbox, that it really requires people to get involved in their local government. I mean, if you got to start somewhere, start in your city council. I think you'd be pretty much shocked at what these guys are doing and how much power they have. And if you don't attend a meeting once a month to just, you know, hear what goes on in your own town, I mean, you have to be that involved. It does take, like you've always said, democracy is not something that can be, you know, received by the, what do they call them, the light of heart or whatever. It takes work to be.
It's not for sissies. It really isn't. You have to be involved. And, you know, that's an important thing in our society, and we don't have enough of it. There's not enough involvement. You're right. You go to community meetings and you see the same people over and over again, and you don't. We hold rallies on statehood, and we talk to people, and they say, yes, of course we should be equal. Yes, of course we should be like everybody else. But then when it comes down to it, we say, come on out to the rally. And they're like, I'm busy this weekend, or I can't do it. Or, well, look, man, if you can't stand up for something, you'll stand for anything. So you really need to step up to the plate on all these issues.
Yeah, you do. And you do have to, and especially, you know, I'm sure that as November 4th approaches, there's a lots and lots of elections going on. In fact, they're going on in every community. And it may be for something as a senator or a representative or your mayor or your city council person or your school board, whatever it is. Let me tell you, get down to the school board. We're talking big money. We're talking huge amounts of money that is, you know, administered by your local superintendent, and you need to get involved to see where that money is being spent. Because if there is one thing you should stand up for as a parent, then you should definitely stand for the education of your children. And you need to go to those school board meetings, and you need to go to the PTA meeting, because these guys are spending so much money. I think it would be, you'd be floored. And, you know, this money comes from your property taxes. So, you know, you need to at least do that much, you know, be involved in where the money is being spent and how it's being spent.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, in Washington, D.C., the local school budget is over $800 million. So that is a lot of money. And the way we educate our children is very important. And so if it's school board or it's county commissioner or it's city council or governor or mayor, you need to find out who these people are, and you need to turn out and vote. And you know what? What you get in a democracy is directly connected to whether you vote or not. Young people get less in our society because they don't vote. You know, if you're sitting there, Kathleen and I have both been in politics for a long time, and I can tell you, if a bunch of old people walk into the office from AARP and a bunch of people from some college walk in the office, the senator or representative is going to meet, first of all, with the AARP people, because they vote and they know the college kids don't vote. Yes. And so even if you're not, you know, even if it's not the particular interest, you serve whatever your particular class is, age, race, sex, by voting. Voting is the lifeblood of politics. And if people think you're going to vote against them, they have more of a tendency to listen to you than not listen to you.
And I think the other thing that was an interesting statistic that we thought of, or we came up with, is that when you have an election where there are two positions, like say two seats are open, what did you say? It was like over half don't vote for the second seat?
Well, I don't know if that's true in all jurisdictions, but in Washington, D.C., where we have a council race, for example, right now, with two positions open for the at-large council seat, half the people don't vote for the second seat. And that's just crazy. You should vote for both seats because both are equally important. So if you, there is no distinction, like the person that wins the first seat doesn't have any more power than the person that, that would win the second seat. So the first guy could win with 100,000 votes, and the second guy could win with 30,000 votes because not enough people vote in the second round. So, you know, that's crazy. We should, you should vote for every office. You should.
And make sure you read the ballot, you know, take your time and read the ballot and make sure you understand it.
Right. And everybody has a website these days. Everybody has a website. So go to people's websites, see what they stand for, see what you agree with, and take a look. Read your local paper and, you know, find a candidate that most suits what you believe in and push for that person. You know, we had, this is Washington, D.C., the capital of the nation, and we had 25% of the eligible voters vote in the primary in April. That means three out of every four people that were eligible to vote didn't vote. It's crazy.
That's terrible.
It's terrible. It's terrible. Well, I can see by the old clock on the wall that we need to wrap up here, so I'm going to give Kathleen the last word as usual because I'm such a gentleman, among other things. So go ahead, Kathleen. Say what's on your mind.
Well, the only reason you're doing that is because I'm just one level above you. If I was still in Arizona, I don't know if you would be so receptive. But I think that one of our talk shows should be, you know, things like Why Men Lie. But maybe that's a different talk show and a different reality. But I just had to tease you about that because we've been talking about that quite a bit. But I want to thank everyone for listening to us. And we hope that we not only can be somewhat entertaining, but that we talk about the issues that are important and things that we need to talk about. And I don't want to scare everyone, but I do think that we need to have the discussion and talk about it in a frame of mind that we don't overreact and go crazy and feel like we all got to run to the hills because Ebola is at our doorstep. We do need to talk about the issues that are scary and talk about them so that we can all come to an agreement on how to handle it. So again, thank you for listening, and I hope that you join us again next week.
Okay, thanks, America. And oh, by the way, men lie because of women. That's the short answer.
With that, call us next Sunday and let us know if you agree with Michael.
All right, thank you. See you next week.
Give the people their right to vote. Give the people their right to vote. Give the people their right.